All right, so to page Tesvav. So we start a little bit the bottom paragraph on the left side, but we'll just start over. Okay. All right, so Nochma, so even what Chaim Vital was telling us is bringing us down again this balance. On the one hand, the Rav Lamshon promises Pnim Sotra will not be forgotten, and Fakeret, it'll become more opened up as time goes on. But on the other hand, one has to know that it only is able to be, one has to receive it. One has to receive it. It's not just Hefker that anyone can come up with it or approach it in whichever way they want. It has to be received from the proper sources and the proper traditions. And so that's what he was giving an example. Even by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, even after the Histalkus of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai gave specific instructions that only Rav Abba will be allowed to write down Rav Shimon's Torah. Thank you. And only Rav Elazar, his son, will be allowed to be the Chayzer to review it orally. And all the other Talmidim is not like that. So let's just see the paragraph again on page Tetzvav. Vihine. So that he's referencing back the Zohar from the previous paragraph, but we see that even after Rav Shimon Bar Yochai gave permission to Rav Abba to write, and who's he writing for? He's not publishing this. He's writing it for the seven Talmidim that were involved with Rav Shimon the whole time. Despite that, Rav Elazar was still makbid, and he still was angry about the fact that Rav Abba is writing. And we see that Rav Abba sort of accepted the sentiment. And Rav Abba responded, going forward, these words will be closed. These words will be closed, and for the rest of the generation, even though they're tanoim, libam kepiskel shlulim, their hearts are open like the gate of the opening of an ulam. Even if they see these words written, it's going to be concealed. And only be revealed to these chaverim by themselves. It's interesting, by the way. It's a funny thing. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai gives permission to Rav Abba, and Rav Elazar is still makbid. Rav Elazar is still angry. No, like, that was the language of the Rav Chaim used. Even though Rav Shimon already gave rishos, and he's only teaching the seven talmidim, afalpik, and Rav Elazar was makbid, and Rav Elazar was angry. And Rav Abba responds, like, maskim, it's only going to be for this small group, and v'chulu. So the question is, Mela, if Rav Abba, why was Rav Elazar angry if Rav Shimon Bar Yochai gave permission? You understand? Like, it's one thing if he didn't know that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai gave permission, so he sees it. Rav Abba, you're writing down this Torah. And so then Rav Abba should say, no, your father told me I could do it. Okay, fine. But like, it sounds like from Rav Chaim that even though Rav Shimon knew that, even though Rav Elazar knew that Rav Shimon gave Rav Abba permission, still Rav Elazar was makbid. So why is he being makbid if he knows that his father gave this Rav Shimon? Yeah? So it's pshat. So Mistama, like anything else, Rav Elazar is not angry for no reason. Rav Elazar is trying to accomplish something with his anger. Everything has to be balanced. I mentioned this idea. We've spoken about this idea before. You have the commander would record, he said that from Abdurov said that when he warned the young alike, when young alike go to a tzaddik, and they have to know that the tzaddik is going to go towards them with a hav and a skarvas. The tzaddik is going to try to embrace, like mamish, go all out to embrace them. And he said, and if they allow themselves to just receive that full embrace, then they'll get swallowed up in it, and it could be actually destructive for them. So he says, when the tzaddik comes to approach you with absolute love, and you know what, you have to sort of approach it. You have to, what you contribute to the relationship is awe and reverence and fear. And then you have this balance. And then what's able to then happen is that the light of the tzaddik is then able to be processed healthfully, because you are approaching it with a sense of trepidation. That's what the Gemara said. Mestama, one can say that's similar to what's going on over here. Rav Shimon gives permission to Rav Abba to write. In other words, that is Rav Shimon embracing the world. And that is, whoever is going to receive these writings, Rav Shimon is embracing. And Rav Abba is his shliach to embrace. But in order to balance it, there has to be someone that represents the other side of the coin, which is the awe and reverence and trepidation. And only between those two will it be received healthfully. So Rabbi Lazar's anger and his being makbid was not just, it wasn't out of, it's not like when we get angry, you know what I mean, it's a reaction. It's not just a reaction, and it's not out, and it wasn't based on any misunderstanding. Adarabba. He knows that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said that Rabbi Abba should write. But Rabbi Lazar knows that, of course, my father says it because my father is the son. My father is Kulei Light. But I, says Rabbi Lazar, I have to make sure that in this Yichud, right, and in this revelation of Pinus HaTorah, there's a contribution of Yira in order to make sure that it's processed properly by the Talmidim. So that was the anger of Rabbi Lazar to sort of balance that. And we see that Rabbi Abba, when he hears the anger of Rabbi Lazar, so what's his response? His response is, yeah, these words are now going to be sealed and they're going to be only received by the right people and only received even within the right people in the right way, that it won't become superficial and it'll become primistic. And that's not Rabbi Lazar just responding to the anger of, that's not just Rabbi Abba responding to the anger of Rabbi Lazar and saying, okay, you know what, fine. That's as a result of Rabbi Lazar's anger. The balance between Rav Shimon's warmth and love and Rabbi Lazar's hakpada, between the two of them, you have a healthy environment that is able to process properly the iris of the Zohar Kaddish. That's the balance. Huh? Yeah, exactly. That's why did Rav Shimon Bar Yochai take his son to begin with to the cave? What does he need Rav Lazar for? Okay, so there's different camaraderie. I don't think he.
Pass it on. How can you receive? Pass it on. How can you receive the Torah?
Pass it on. When he's going to come out of the cave anyway. So, Lamanashach, if he's worried about him not surviving, then neither of them are going to survive the cave. And if he believes he's going to come out of the cave, so then he'll pass it on. What does he need? What does it help to? What does it help to have someone else in the cave with you?
Can we assume that when the Torah says, let's say, "May Shabbat not get angry," that it's also like?
Of course, every time it's like that. You're being piled something.
Negatively, it says, "Bala called cast, Bala called toys."
Well, it's bad. Listen, it depends on the situation. But sometimes there's a shemitz or something, whatever it is. But you know, but again, Torah is, you know, shivim panim l'Torah. There's always different levels. There's pshat and so on, but when you're dealing with an anger like Rav Lazar, you know, like an anger like in this particular case, it's especially now because it's highlighted the fact that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that he knew that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai gave permission to Rav Abba, so was he getting angry about it? Right? So one of the reasons why he takes Rav Lazar in the cave is because he understands that that's the balance. In order for the iris of the Zohar to be properly brought down in a healthy way, there has to be a balance between, on the one hand, Rav Shimon, who's Kulai Ahava, and Rav Lazar, who's able to approach it like sort of representing the Talmidim, representing the world, receiving this light, to approach it with trepidation and awe. We find this as a theme with the Rav Lazar. There's other stories in the Gemara like that. Huh?
He's like the Gevurah Sheba Chesed.
Gevurah and Chesed, that's the balance between the two of them.
But is it Gevurah or it's the Gevurah Sheba Chesed? Like Rav Shimon's manifestation of his Gevurah.
I don't know. I'm not sure how to say it yet. But it's a balance between the two of them. It's a balance between the two of them. It's that type of Indian, yeah.
There's the idea of Nasa Mishra and Kapha Lam,
no? Right, right, right. Very good, very good. It has to have that balance. Very good, very good. So he says like this, Vafgam imhu b'toich machshavas libam v'loim anasav aluchutz. And because of this conversation, so what emerges is that these writings of Rav Abba are going to be limited to the right Talmidim, and even amongst the right Talmidim, it'll only be in a way that they receive it in their hearts, not superficially. And again, that's also because of a contribution of Chesed and Gvura. There's a mimer of this, like this in the Baal Tanya, where the bracha of the tefillos for rain, right, Mashiach Marigesh and so on, is in the second bracha Shemoneh Esrei, which is the bracha of Gvuras, Ata Gibor Lo Mashem. Why would the bracha for rain, which is chesed. Why would that be in the bracha of gevurah? It's called gevurah geshamim, right? Maseches Tanit, gevurah geshamim. Why is it called gevurah geshamim? So what Tani says is that if you had, rain is not just chesed. He said if you had theoretical, if you had water come down from Shemayim that was pure chesed, then that would just be a mist. Just be a mist. Why? Because it would just be like this vapor that covers everything. But that wouldn't accomplish much. In order for rain to be productive, you have to have some element of gevurah taking the particles of moisture away from certain spaces and concentrating them in a certain spot. And then those points of moisture become concentrated to become a raindrop, and it comes the force and it's able to accomplish. So when you deal, when, so in other words, whenever you have this balance of chesed and gevurah, the result is a shefa that gets to the pnimius. Just like with rain. If you didn't have an influx of gevurah, if there was no intensity to the raindrops, then it would just, you know, it would be like dew in the morning, but it wouldn't accomplish. In order to penetrate the soil, to get to the kishkes, then, and it can't just be chesed, it has to be chesed with an intensity from gevurah. And so that's what's going on over here, because of the chesed of Rav Shimon and the gevurah of Elazar. So now the words that are written down by Rav Abba can now penetrate the hearts of the Talmidim, and it gets into the kishkes instead of it just being superficial. That's the balance. To a certain degree, that's the new Rosh Hashanah, right? So you have certain, there's an aspect of Rosh Hashanah which is reflecting Hashem's love and Hashem's sort of approaching the world. Hashem becomes the king, so it means Hashem is close to the world now. On the other hand, there's an aspect of Rosh Hashanah which is trepidation and awe, the Yom HaDin, and so on. And you have some Yidden that are focused on this, some Yidden that are focused on that. So, you know, Lamashal, in earlier generations, it was enough to say, El Ve'el De'Lukim Chaim. Fine, every group has their reading, it's fine. But as you get closer to Mashiach, that's not enough. You can't just say, El Ve'el De'Lukim Chaim. You have to realize how each group completes each other. And each group is part of a bigger picture that only emerges from all these groups. The Iris of Rosh Hashanah, in order for the Iris of Rosh Hashanah to be experienced, number one, healthfully, and number two, in a pneumistic way, it means there needs to be a balance of chesed and gevurah. So that means, on the one hand, you need to realize the sort of mitzad the Rebbe, mitzad of Shem Reichai, the Iris that are coming in, and the ahava that Hashem has toward the world. And on the other hand, you need the Reb Lazar and the Talmud's perspective to approach that shefa and that ar with respect, reverence, and awe, and a sense of bittul. And only with that balance is the result gevuras gesham. That's the result of rain that comes down in a way that penetrates the heart in a productive way. Otherwise, it's not. So you have some groups of Yidden. So every group of Yidden, Bitzad, Sharash, Nishmasam, embody these two sides of the coin. And they're both necessary. So it's not just Eilu Ve'el De'Lukim Chaim.
It's not an excuse. Like, usually you say Eilu Ve'el
De'Lukim Chaim.
It's like an excuse.
Right. It's like, okay, live and let live. Yeah. Each group only functions properly because there's another one. Because we're coming. The realization is that we're coming to build something else. What are we coming to build? We're coming to build a real deep, a pneumistic experience of Elikos Ratash and Peva. And the only way that works is if you have a chesed and gevurah to get balanced. To a certain degree, when you zoom out, that's to a certain degree the whole inyan of Rosh Hashanah through Sukkot, right? So, like I said, you zoom into Rosh Hashanah, you'll see these two qualities. You zoom out, so Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Bechlal is this sort of certain, like, it's smoyle tachas roshi, it's sort of like a gevurah experience. And then the flip side of that is Sukkot. That's more of the chesed, right? Now we're able to receive the light of Hashem, which was coming from the very beginning, right? So, you know, Bashkacha Pratis, by the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when people would be Oyle Regal, right? So it's interesting. Nowadays in Golos, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is probably more the focal point in terms of preparation as opposed to Sukkot. I mean, Sukkot needs practical preparation, Dalaminim, but in terms of like avoided dikah preparation, there's no question about it that in Golis our avoided preparation is certainly more for Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. And Sukkot is just like oh my gosh, it's already Sukkot, right? That's, and then you have to quickly scramble to like, what's in your Sukkot, you know? But it's interesting. By the times of Beis Hamikdash, it was mamash the opposite. The times of Beis Hamikdash, people would be traveling to be Oyla Regal. To be Oyla Regal, that was the Iker. That was the Iker. The Gemara says in Tainus L'Mashal that it would take many, many Yidden. It would take at least a couple, it would take almost up to 2 weeks to travel to Beis Hamikdash. So if you think about it, that means that there was like Rosh Hashanah and Kippur Minyanim on the road. You know, it was, I'm not going to say Rechatz Rosh Hashanah and Kippur was an afterthought, but the Ikar Avoida was Sukkot. So what's, how do you make sense of that? But it's also part of it, right? Because the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the dominant side of the coin is Hashem's side of the coin, is the Tzaddik side, the Rishon Barichoy side of the coin, which is more Sukkot. On the, by Gullus, what's the side of the coin that's more dominant? The Talmud, Rabbi Lazar, our side of the coin, how we approach the light of Hashem, was Rosh Hashanah Kippur. But again, so not only when you zoom in is like that, and you zoom out, but historically it's also like that. Historically it's like that. So again, from all these pieces of the puzzle being put together, so from all of this emerges a healthy ability to process the light of Hashem properly in a pneumistic way, which is going to be with the third base of English. So the times that Bezman Shavuot in the Shari Kaim was more, that was Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. That was the love of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The times of Golas is more of the anger of Rav Elazar. But those two come together to allow, you know, Gevurah Geshamim for it to be penetrated properly with the light of desire and the pneumis of the heart, which is the third Beis HaMikdash. And again, like I said, you see that in the time period, you know. It's the same thing with El, right? If you zoom in on El, it's the same thing. HaMelech Basad, the king's in the field. So what do we respond, how do we, so you would think, So what do we do to reciprocate? We blow the shofar, right? Why? Well, one of the main reasons is in order, you know, like the Torah says, you talk a shofar of Am LeYechidu in order to create Yira. One second. I thought Yiddish, a major, Yiddishkeit's about like being on the same page as Hashem, right? So Hashem puts on tefillin, we put on tefillin, right? Hashem wears tzitzis, we wear tzitzis. All of a sudden, when it comes to this time, and El, it's like, one second, Hashem is being Makarev, he's Melech Basad, he's coming out to us. And so what is our response? To be in awe and fear? That's not his, it doesn't seem to be, but the answer is that's the point. That's exactly the story. It's setting up the stage for the month of Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah and Kippur and Sukkot. It's setting up that stage. That's what's going on by El also. So Hashem is Makarev. In order to receive his warmth, we have to build a Kalim for it. And the Kalim come from that Yira and Pachad and Bittel and Shiflus and Efesh and the Shofar of El. That's what
that's the point.
Huh? But that because we're both part of the same thing. We're both trying to accomplish the same thing. We're partnering together with that. But it's all that's again. That's the it's a confusing time. This time.
You're saying that to be a kli kibul for the love of Hashem in El requires the Pachad and the
Yira. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Not like a steer, you know.
No, it's not a steer at all. That's the point. Again, in the beginning, so it's not like this. You're wrong. You're wrong. And then it becomes, no, you know what? You have your base manager, I'll have my base manager. But then you begin, as you get closer to Mashiach, no. Not only are we not fighting with each other, and not only is it live and let live, I need you. I need you to have your base manager doing your Inyan. And you need me to have my base manager doing my Inyan. And only coming together will be able to accomplish something. But that comes with like a much deeper meichin of Klal Yisrael, you know. Because if a person's not thinking, you know, if you're not thinking Klal Yisrael, you're thinking Yechidim. Then that, you know, then all you know is your lens, you know. But if a person, you know, begin to think more of Klal Yisrael, then you realize how all these pieces are absolutely necessary. Ein melech b'loy am, not ein melech b'loy yichidim. You know what I'm saying? That's so there requires that. In Rosh Hashanah itself, right? You have the davening goes back and forth. And like, sing. I'm not even, like any shul, right? There's like singing and then sad, and not sad, but like serious. Like it you know, it goes back and forth. There's a mice like that from the Rishon. You know the famous mashal? I've mentioned this before, the famous mashal from the Rishon. You know, there's a... He says he can't. He would come into Matzah Shabbos a lot. The Beis Medrash say stories. So it was once he comes in and he says a mice. He says there was once a yid. He spent his whole life like in some shtetl on the farms, whatever it is. He never went to the big city. He never went to a minyan on Rosh Hashanah. So he decided 1 year he's going to go. All right. So he goes. And he doesn't know much about the davening. He's ever, so he's just following along, you know. And at some point, everyone starts crying. Everyone's like a sad song. Everyone starts crying. And so he goes to the Ganesh and he's like, what's... Shh. Don't, you know. So he's trying to figure out why everyone's sad. And he realizes, oh, it must be Aitaka. No. Is it because it's late? Diving for a long time. People are hungry. So they're crying because they're hungry. So he also starts to cry. And then a few minutes later, the chazan picks up a happy nig and everyone's singing and dancing. So he goes to the next time, what? Shh. She's like, what? So, oh, I know. Because when I walked in, you're able to, when you pass by the kitchen, you're able to smell like the chalent, the kogel, whatever, the kiddush that's going to be after davening. So everyone probably reminded themselves of the kiddush and they're happy. So he's also happy. And then a few minutes later, it's a sad niggin again. So he's like, then he realized, then he thinks to himself, you know what? It's not good, true. Even though we reminded ourselves of the chalent and kogel that's coming, lemaisa, it's still very late. It's taking too long. So he begins to cry again. And the Rishna said, that's the story of Klal Yisrael and Galus, you know? That's the story. Okay, Mr. Hashem, we should appreciate that everyone's everyone contributes to this advice. All right, shkayach.